Hiya guys, Caroline Stephen, financial journalist. As the mentor program kicks off for 2017, we have trading psychologist and peak performance coach Dr. Harry Stanton on creating a winning mindset. Dr. Harry is a chocolate box of psychological insights from decades of sports and trading psychology. As the new mentorees will discern, trading is a voyage of self-discovery. Once you've mastered the mechanics of trading, it really becomes an internal battle. There's a cartoon strip by Walt Kelly called Pogo, and his most famous quote is, "We have met the enemy, and he's us." The real enemy isn't the markets or outside. The real enemy is fear, doubt, indecision. The real enemy is your own inner saboteur. If there's anyone who's going to help you play your inner A game, not only in trading but in life, it is Dr. Harry. I loved doing this interview with Dr. Harry. I loved doing the research. I loved speaking with him, and I loved what he had to say. I hope you enjoy it too. Dr. Harry Stanton is recognized as Australia's leading peak performance coach. He's the author of over 250 articles and 9 books, and was the first author in Australia to publish a book on positive thinking back in 1979. In this Talking Trading interview with Dr. Harry, we delve into some of the concepts and techniques in Let the Trade Winds Flow. Dr. Harry Stanton, hello and welcome to Talking Trading.
I'm very happy to be with you.
Let's talk about Let the Trade Winds Flow, your inimitable book. Question number one, Harry, is it true that once people have mastered the mechanics of trading, that the key to winning in the markets then becomes internal and not external?
The whole idea of a mechanical way of investing is that you don't have to think about what you're doing. You've got set parameters and you just follow them. And if it says buy, you buy, and if it says sell, you sell. The big problem, though, the internal problem, is people constantly second guess. They'll see it quite clearly before them. This is a buy. This is my system. This tells me. But, oh, God, it may be not right this time. I've had too many losers in a row. And it's that second guessing that undermines it. You've got to be able to stick absolutely mechanically to your system. And if you're losing, you've got to try and just change your system. But the fact is, you can't play around with it while you're operating it. And that's the internal factor. The external factor is, yes, you have hopefully a way of investing that's going to make money for you.
So successful traders continually strive to be the very best traders they can be. Is that actually more important than making money in the markets?
It depends, I think, on how important money is to you. Trading really is a voyage of self-discovery. It's been described that way, and it is. You learn a great deal about the sort of person you are and how you handle things. Now, some people, money is so important to them that that is why they trade. It's a way of making money. But for a lot of people, it's the pitting themselves against the market, seeing if they can work out a way by which they are successful rather than unsuccessful. And once that happens, the money becomes almost incidental. It just happens as a matter of course, rather than as being the total focus of what you're concentrating on.
So it's the challenge and the game.
Yeah, it's the challenge. And you say the game. That's exciting for people.
If you follow your system exactly, regardless if the trade was a winner or a loser, should you reward yourself?
Yes, I think this is a much broader area than just trading. There's a thing called a psychological approach called the PREMAC principle, which is
the PREMAC.
PREMAC. Mm-hmm. It's grandma's remedy. You don't get to eat dessert till you've eaten your vegetables. In other words, one of the most effective ways of managing your life, particularly managing your way at work and so on, is that, I mean, sometimes we have things to do which are unpleasant. We really don't want to do them. On the other hand, there are things we thoroughly enjoy doing. And the secret is to pair things. that if there's something unpleasant you have to do, okay, preferably do it first thing and then immediately reward yourself with something you enjoy doing. Something as simple as having a cup of coffee, ringing a friend, walking outside in the sunshine for a little while. It doesn't matter what it is. And you do that all through the day, pairing things. The least pleasant thing you do and immediately reward yourself afterwards. And I think the same thing is true with very much with trading. Yes, you've got to reward yourself for the things that work well for you.
And I'm guessing that sets up the neural channels in the brain to associate something unpleasant with something pleasant.
Yeah, but the beauty of it is when you do organise things this way, even though you've maybe had to do quite a few somewhat unpleasant things during the day, because you've given yourself all these rewards, you feel pretty good by the end of the day.
You've had a good day.
Real plus, yeah.
Let's talk about the perception of failure in trading. You said in your book that effective learning is error-driven and that it's failure that grabs our attention. And Bruce Kovner in Market Wizard said, you have to be willing to make mistakes regularly. Next time someone loses in the markets, are they really one step closer to becoming a successful trader?
Depends if they learn from what they're doing. If you lose and are losing consistently, you're probably not any closer because you're probably making the same mistakes again and again and again. I'm a great believer in remaking errors. Down in Tasmania, years ago, there was a state women's basketball team. And they asked me to have a couple of sessions with them because they hadn't won a match in a year and a half, actually. And what I got them to do, a very simple thing, after practice and after a match, I got them to not sit around bitching at each other for mistakes they'd made, which is what they had been doing, was to imagine, to think back over the game and think of four good things they'd done. And each of those, run them through in their mind half a dozen times again, because the unconscious mind apparently can't tell the difference between something you imagine and something that actually happens. So, all right, you've done it right once, now you repeat it six times. Then you think of, say, four mistakes you've made, and each time just wipe it out of your mind and half a dozen times replay it the way you wish you had have handled it. Now, they started winning matches, and they said the big thing that helped them most, we went through a lot of things, but said that was the one that helped them most because they felt they were reinforcing the things they'd done well and remaking the things they'd done poorly. And that's true right through your life. It's not just sport where it's very important in sport, but it's important, very important in trading too. Let's say you've done a trade and you've done all the right things. Now, it's a good idea to, in your mind, to think back over that, to sort of feel good about what you've achieved and run it through your mind a few times to reinforce it. Okay, you've done something wrong. You realise you've done something wrong. You haven't stuck to your system or whatever it is. Okay, mentally wipe it out of your mind half a dozen times, replay it the way you wish you had have done it. It makes a huge difference in behaviour when you do this.
Phyllis Schultz, the author of Failure, states that every single person thinks they're a failure. The only people who don't are the ones who really are. What do you think about that? Do you think that's true?
Yeah, probably some truth in it. I think it's much easier to focus on failures than success. A lot of sessions when I run a seminar, I'd often get people to think of a success experience and a failure experience. They had no trouble to think of the failure experiences, but had a lot of trouble thinking of a success experience. Yet when I got them to share their ideas, and people would talk about things they regard as successes, other people said, oh, yeah, I've done that, I achieved that, but I sort of didn't think of it as a success. And what you really have to do is to focus on the things you do well, because we forget them too easily. And I like the idea of a positive diary, that each day you jot down things that are good things that have happened or good things you've done, successes and so on. You don't jot down anything else other than that. And then at the end of the week, you look back through the week and think, gee, I did a lot of things well. It was a pretty good week. Mm. Whereas what we, unfortunately, when we diarise things, we're usually talking about failures and feeling ill and not being up to scratch and so on. Got to focus on the things that are going well, I think, rather than things that are going badly. Another thing, too, is to get things in proportion. I mean, every trade's the first one or the next 1,000 you make and so on, but I find if I get a patient that will come to me, maybe it's a trading problem they've got and so on, or some other problem, but it's so important to them. And I say, you know, on a scale of 10, 1 to 10, how bad would it be? Oh, God, it's a 9 or a 10, and they're really agonising over it. And then, so, you know, look, say you're involved in an accident, you became a paraplegic, what would that be? Oh, God, that'd be a 10. Your son got injured. By the time we finish, their problem is a 1 or a 2. We get things out of proportion.
Mm.
And it's really important to see that so much of the stuff we agonise over is so trivial.
Mm.
I think you've got to get things in proportion. It's really important.
And I think getting things in proportion, you need some contrast to what you've got.
God. You only have to listen to the news, which I mean is just a diet of misery. That's what our euphemists call them. Well, it is. It's just a diet of misery. They find misery all around the world. And you realise how many people are living in conditions far worse than your own. And yet you're complaining so much. There's the studies done in England to show that, I hate to get gender specific here, but 80% of a woman's conversation proves to be complaints, and about 45% of a man's conversation is complaints. And we're constantly complaining about trivialities.
There's scientific proof that rumination is linked to depression. Do you think people who often succeed, actually had the ability to nip rumination in the bud? And just before you answer that, I just want to say what led to this question. It was a conversation I had with Louise Bedford, and Louise was discussing how she does that. She nips her rumination in the bud. She just doesn't think about things that she doesn't want to think about. And she thinks that is why she can get on and be so productive with what she does.
I think she's quite right. I think there's a very simple question to ask yourself. If you think you're something and you're feeling bad and miserable, you've got to ask yourself, what's the result of me thinking this? What payoff do I get for it? What's the end result? Usually the end result is making you feel miserable. Nothing else. You gain nothing else whatsoever from agonising about things. And yet we do it constantly. I do this myself. You know, I start, next week I've got a medical test coming up which, could be serious. Mm. And, the thought comes into your mind, but there is no point in thinking about what would happen if it's wrong, because at the moment it doesn't help me in any way other than to make me feel bad. It's not worth it. But I think that's what one you have to do. And you have to reframe things. Reframing is one of the greatest powers we've got, that we take something initially bad and we reframe it so it's good. I'll tell you a little story. A doctor having dinner with his wife at a restaurant, and a very attractive blonde is passing and just taps him on the shoulder and says, "Oh, Sammy, you're looking good. You are really looking good, you know." And the wife says, as this woman leaves, "Who was that?" And he said, "Oh, that's my mistress." She said, "You've got a mistress?" He said, "Well, yes. Oh," she said, "well, that'll be the end of you. I'm going to see about getting a divorce." And he said, "Well, you really ought to think about this a bit. You do that and that's the end of the new car every year, the holiday cottages, all your time off with your friends and the overseas trips and so on." And at that stage, he gets interrupted by another very attractive girl, this one a redhead, passes and said, "Oh, it's nice to see you, Sammy. Haven't seen you around for a while. You're looking great." She said, "Who was that?" And he said, "Oh, that was the mistress of my partner, you know, Dr. Fish." "Oh," she said, "I think ours is much better than hers, than his." You've got to take a negative thing and see it differently. Great skill.
There's a Kelly's cartoon strip, Pogo, We've Met the Enemy and It's Us.
Yeah.
Why is it important to see the opponent in your own head as your main problem?
There's a very good book written by a man called Tim Galway. He's a tennis player. In fact, I played tennis with him once when I was in America, and he wrote a book called The Inner Game of Tennis. And he said, all throughout, when you play tennis, as an example of life itself, there is two games we play. There's the outer game against our opponents, like we beat George today, or I got a terrific good score, and I was really hitting the forehand well, and that's the outer game. But he said, it's the inner game that we play against the obstacles in our own mind, like fear and doubt and indecision and so on. And that is our enemy. I mean, the way we undermine ourselves. So many of my patients, and particularly trading people, talk about an inner saboteur that interferes with what they're able to do. They think about doing something and then this little voice within them saying, oh, well, you're not going to do that. What about the time you failed? And it's that inner saboteur that you have to change. And there are some easy ways of doing it.
Let's talk about some of those.
Well, one of the ways, if you get a voice in your head, well, for instance, I had a work with a golfer down here that, and she was very good, but she would get to the semi-finals of tournaments and then almost invariably fail. And her inner saboteur, I get it, so what did the voice sound like? And in fact, it was her mother's voice telling her that she was, no good at doing things and so on. A lot of mothers, unfortunately, do that with their daughters. And she could hear her mother's voice. So what I got to do was to change it. And we changed it in different ways, but eventually made it sound like Donald Duck gargling underwater. Now, the interesting thing is, from the time we made that change, she started winning tournaments. When she heard this ridiculous voice, it made her laugh rather than it undermined her self-confidence.
How incredible.
And you can do it with images. I had a chap who was, unfortunately, in his childhood years, brought up in a very strict religious school, and he had this terrific fear of death and purgatory and so on, and he could see the devil. He really did. The devil was undermining this devil with his red hair, red face and ears and tridents and all the rest of it, and we turned that into a fluffy bunny. And you say, oh, that sort of stuff can't work. It does. The power we've got is to change our image. If we've got something that bothers us, you change it. It's why I handle people who have been bullied. Okay, what you do is you have to turn the bully into someone at whom you'd laugh. And once you can do that, you remove their power to intimidate you. And we can do that. We just shift around in our mind. A person occurs to us just as the image in our mind, not as they actually are.
Can we walk through some more techniques to silence the opponent in your head? I've got a few written down here. So if I say them, can you tell me a little bit about them? Number one, remember your magic moments.
Well, you see, that's the positive diary idea.
Okay.
Another way of doing it is to go back to the magic moment, whatever it might be, and to perhaps, when you think of it, clench your hand into a fist. Now, the idea is every time you remember that magic moment, you clench the fist. Every time you do something that is terrific, you clench the fist. After a while, when you're feeling a bit flat, you clench your fist and you feel good. You link that experience to the anchor of clenching your fist. It's a simple idea, but it works very well.
Visualization of the performance before the event.
Well, yes, that's really important. You see, when you're trading, I think it's a really good idea to imagine yourself, imagine things happening the way you want them to happen. They're not always going to do that. But the fact is, there is a fair bit of evidence to show that if you mentally prepare yourself for success, you're more likely to get it. I find I have great success with people who've had trouble passing exams and so on, because when they think of the exam, they think of failure, and you have to change that to them thinking of a success scenario rather than a failure scenario. And the same with trading. You think of a winning rather than losing.
And what that would feel like.
Yeah.
All right, we've talked about this, but is there something you want to add more to it? Recreating the event when something's not gone the way you would like it to go, so you imagine it the way it should.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. I think that is really important. to remake situations as soon as possible afterwards when you feel you've made a mistake. That is really important in trading, because often what we do is we try to second guess the trading plan, and perhaps we make a mess of it. Afterwards, you have to remake that in your mind as if you followed your plan and got the good result. And you've got to do it as soon as possible afterwards, and probably do it a few times.
Replacing negatives with symbols of success and power.
Yeah, you use the negatives of cues, actually. That, and some people are very good at this, and I think Louise does this quite well, that when you get a negative thought, you use it as a trigger to think of something positive. And that's when, of course, you can clench your fist and bring in this good result from the past. One of the things I do with people is a clenched fist idea, that I get them to think of successes they've had, and as they do, they have their fist clenched and they think of more and more successes and so on. And in the future, whenever they have a success, they'll clench their fist. But then also, I get them to think that you can't stop the negative thoughts coming into your mind, but you can then control them. Imagine them. Let's say you clench the right fist for the positive input. Okay, this time you think of the negative stuff flowing down your left arm into your left fist, locking up in the left fist. And when you feel you've got it all locked up there, you open the left fist and shut the right. Amazing that once you train yourself to do this, you get an instantaneous shift from the negative to the positive.
Praising yourself as opposed to indulging in self-criticism.
Yeah, well, self-criticism doesn't help a lot. There's a very good book, The Five-Minute Manager. It was written years ago. These two American researchers were trying to find out what made one business successful and another unsuccessful. They were trying to find the common factors, and only one factor emerged that has made a huge difference. The successful CEOs and so on caught their staff doing something right and praised them. The unsuccessful ones caught their people doing something wrong and blamed them.
Wow.
And that was the one key thing. And that's what you've got to do for yourself, to catch yourself doing something right and praising yourself, rather than constantly beating up on yourself for the things you did wrongly. And that's where, in fact, so much parenting and so much teaching goes all wrong. They're focusing always on mistakes and errors and blaming people, rather than praising them for the things they're doing well.
Worry lists.
I think with a worry list, you set aside a time to worry. That, let's say you think, all right, I'm going to have a worry time late afternoon, 3:30 to 4:00. So you're doing things and a worry comes into your mind. You think, well, I'm not going to bother about that now. All right, I'll put that down on the list and worry about that at 3:30. And this is what happens. You keep putting all the worries on the list. When you come to 3:30, you find most of the things you worried about don't matter anymore. And you spend a bit of time worrying about a couple and then get back to business. In fact, a very simple idea is, I often find people who, let's say they've had some bad trading experiences and they're really upset, they feel really bad about it all. What I get them to do is to write down, and they have to do this for half an hour, let's say. They have to write down all the way they're feeling about this trade, what it is they did wrong and so on. And when they run out of things, they just keep repeating themselves. But they have to write all this negative stuff down for half an hour. The next night, they read what they've written and burn it.
Mm.
And you start the whole process again. It's a two-night process. Write and then read and burn. And it's quite amazing. I find it works so well, particularly with people who are worried and upset about broken relationships and all this sort of thing. It works really well.
I've done it on your suggestion, and I was amazed at how powerful it was. So
yeah,
simple, so powerful.
Simple stuff again.
All right, what about writing your goals down on paper? Because Mark Victor Hansen, the author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, said that by recording your dreams and goals on paper, you set in the motion the process of becoming the person you most want to be. What do you think about that, Harry?
I've never been a great goal setter, but I know many people have been very successful doing it. It ties in with the idea of thinking about what you want instead of what you don't want, of focusing on what you're doing well rather than what you're doing poorly, and giving yourself an aim, really. See, one of the points is people talk about long-term goals, and they are very important and so on, but one of the books that influenced me very strongly in my life was a book by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning, who, as a result of his experiences in the concentration camps, virtually came to the conclusion there was no meaning in life at all other than what you put in it yourself. And he believed you took one day at a time, gave yourself a couple of goals for that day, and created a sense of satisfaction by achieving these and making each day productive. So hopefully these would lead to longer term goals as well. But the main thing was achieving something each day, taking each day as a fresh opportunity, a fresh life, instead of doing what most of us do, worrying about things we've done in the past, which is pointless because you've done them, or more important, the biggest source of stress in our life is worrying about things in the future that normally never happen. That you focus, and it's not easy to do, but the fact is if you can focus on the day, taking one day at a time, taking each day as a fresh opportunity, that can change your life, actually.
Second last question. The power of association. You've got a very beautiful saying that I think about quite a lot. If you want
you mean about the eagles?
Yeah.
If you want to fly with the eagles, don't hang out with the turkeys. It's difficult because most people are, unfortunately, negative. They walk around with a black cloud around them and they infect everyone around them. You try to avoid people like that. Sometimes you can't help it. You're in a relationship with someone. So many of the patients I work with are often in relationships with people who are very, very negative. It's difficult to stay bright, to stay positive, to stay happy when you are constantly getting bombarded by misery. And I think one of the biggest sources of people feeling miserable is, as I said, what we euphemistically call the news. I have so many patients who, once they cut back on their exposure to listening and watching news, their mood states improve dramatically. Because if you're constantly bombarded by all the things that are wrong, you adapt to them almost, you absorb them. And you think the world is a really dangerous place, that it's full of all these terrible things to be frightened of. Because they're not talking about any of the good things that happen, which are many, many, many. They're so busy talking about misery. And I think you have to cut back on your exposure to that sort of thing. I mean, there are people who listen to news services many, many times during the day. And it has a very depressing effect, I think.
Henry Thoreau, the great author, said, "Go confidently in the direction of your dreams and live the life you have imagined." And this is the reason traders trade, so that they can have the time to fulfill their dreams and not be bound to an office. Harry, what piece of advice would you give to our traders to end this interview?
Well, you don't do what Thoreau did. He went and lived this idyllic little existence by the lake and meditated, and that was the way to do it, except he gave it away for a job. It was too damn difficult. But I think it is important to try to have a dream, to have something that you feel is really important, but not to be unhappy because you can't achieve it. The Dalai Lama once said, "The secret of contentment is to want what you have instead of wanting what you don't have." And I think a lot of people make their lives very miserable by constantly wanting things they haven't got. And when they've got them, it doesn't make them happy, so they need more and more and more. Whereas people who are content with the things they have, with the small pleasures in each day, they tend to live a much happier life, I think, in many ways. But it is nice to have a dream, I suppose, and that you, as I said, this each day idea, that each day perhaps you try and do something to just inch you towards achieving that dream. I think you concentrate on living one day at a time, maybe 1 hour at a time, one trade at a time. Every trade you make, first trade of the next thousand. You just take them one at a time. And I think once you start doing that, focusing on the present instead of worrying about the future or getting miserable about the past, you give yourself a chance to improve your life dramatically.
Dr. Harry, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Pleasure, Caroline. Pleasure.
Stay tuned next week, guys, to hear the stock whisperer, Stephanie Kammerman, and hear how she takes profits in the markets. Have a great week. Happy trading. All the best.
You've been listening to talkingtrading.com.au with Caroline Stephen. Make sure you are subscribed to this website to receive the very latest market views, commentary, and expert opinion. Tune in next week as we've got a bumper show planned. Bye for now.
The views represented on Talking Trading are general in nature and do not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Before acting on any of the information, consider its appropriateness in regard to your own situation.